Welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast with your hosts, Tony Castelnova from DisneyByTheNumbers.com and Parkhopper John from WDWParkhoppers.com. Keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast at all times. And get ready for the Disney Parks Podcast.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast. My name is John. Joining me, as always, is the lovely and talented Mr. Tony Castelnova from Disney by the Numbers. And we have an incredible show for you. We have Mr. Tony Cortese from the Dreamfinders movie to talk about the movie and how it came to be. It's going to be a great conversation. Welcome to the show, Tony, and thanks for taking time to talk to us today.
Oh, thanks, fellas. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so we always like to ask people, you know, how they got started with their Disney passion. So can you tell us, Tony, you know, how you got started with your love for all things Disney?
Well, I mean, I think like many people, Disney has is, you know, in my opinion, a very much an American tradition. It's these days it's become well beyond an American tradition with Tokyo and Paris and all that good stuff. But growing up, Disney was always a very big part of my life. And I think the first time I visited, I was about 7 or 8 years old. I just went with my mom and dad. We stayed at the Contemporary, and it was a trip that I will never forget. I just remember feeling that this place was something so unique. I didn't quite know how to put my finger on it, but that first trip was just really life changing for me. I remember walking out of our room, and we stayed in the Contemporary, and walking out of the room in the morning to see the monorail gliding through the lobby of the Contemporary was being shot to the moon. It was just unbelievable. And ever since that day, I had been hooked. Always knew that this was going to be a place that really connected with me. So I think that's probably where it first began for me.
I think everybody has, I can't say everybody. I think most people either get bitten by the bug or it's just a vacation place for them. I think people fit in one of those two categories.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, a lot of what we talk about in the documentary is what draws people to Walt Disney World. Why are there so many passionate Disney fans? And we talk a lot about that in the film, but I think you're right. I think it's different for everyone. The reason why you like it or I don't think anybody doesn't like it. I think some people might think it's, you know, a very commercialized thing or whatever you want to call it. But I think that Disney is such a unique and special place that, you know, if you're willing to let your inner kid out, I think that's the trick, is to not be afraid to just kind of, you know, be a kid and just have fun and don't, you know, kind of leave all that other stuff behind you. That's kind of what allows you to really get the most out of it. I mean, as an adult, I feel like I'm getting more out of Disney as an adult than I did as a kid. I mean, the kid part was kind of what kind of ramped me up into finding, you know, what was interesting about it. But now as an adult, as I go back there and I have seen how much my daughter enjoys it, it's really, it actually just continues to grow to become even more of a special place for me.
Right. And that's a great dovetail into the movie, because that's the central theme, at least in the trailers that I've seen, that these people have a love for this place. So why don't you tell us a little bit about this project and how it came to be, and really let our listeners know what this Dreamfinders movie is all about.
Sure. Well, you know, I've always been kind of involved in the creative kind of space. My professional career for many years has been as a web designer. So being, you know, creatively kind of engaged in my career has been something that has always been at the forefront. I was in radio when I was 16 years old, like a sophomore in high school, and I was on the radio. And since those days, I've always kind of just been trying to find the direction that I wanted to go in. And in the last probably 6 or 7 years, filmmaking has really begun to pique my interests. Storytelling, and because Disney is such an incredible, has always held an incredible place in my heart, I've always wanted to tell the story of why I felt so passionately about being there. And, you know, I remember taking my daughter there for the first time when she was about 9 or 10 years old. And as much as I enjoyed spending time with her and doing all the things that we did, you know, there was another part of me that was always kind of looking at all those fine details and, you know, how do they keep this place so clean? And it's 40 years old and it still looks brand new. You know, how is this done? Why am I so drawn to this place? And, you know, in recent years, I really felt compelled to really explore that story. And that's what the Dreamfinders documentary is about. You know, the name Dreamfinders, as I'm sure you guys well know, part of, you know, the attraction, the journey into imagination. And I wanted to really kind of lay into that and find people who have the same, you know, I mean, at the time that I did this, I didn't, you know, I mean, I'm living here in New York, in the New York area. I didn't really know what the basis of the story was going to be. I just knew I wanted to tell a story about what makes Disney magic so special and why so many people are drawn to the parks. And just by accident, I met John Sicari, who has the show BigFatPanda.com. Honestly, he was really the gateway that helped me find other very passionate Disney fans who were bloggers and podcasters like yourselves and folks who have, you know, kind of left their day jobs and moved down to Walt Disney World to find their passion, to live their Disney dream. I think a lot of people think that Disney is just for kids, and I think that, you know, those folks don't really truly understand what Disney really is. You know, Walt Disney created this place because he wanted families and children to have a mutual place where they can enjoy together. And there's nothing truer than what he's achieved. I mean, he was obviously alive through Disneyland, but what a shame that he never really got to see his Florida project. And we do talk a little bit about that. But the film really focuses on these podcasters and bloggers. It's really features Lou Mangiello, which I'm sure you guys know. He's kind of, I call him like the godfather of it all, because he's been doing it the longest. Ricky Briganti from Inside the Magic, John Sicari from BigFatPanda.com, Jenny Lynn Knopp, she's most recently with The Diz, and also Ron Schneider, who is the original Dreamfinder, right? So, and John Panda was the guy who really kind of helped introduce me to these other folks. And as I got to know them, I really began to craft my story. And the story really is not only about them and what drew them down to the parks, but what is the magnetism? You know, what is the Disney magic, right? What is it? Why is it that you walk into this place and there's this kind of tangible energy that everybody kind of feeds into? And it's something that you can't quite put your finger on. And it's something that I was able to deeply relate to, and I wasn't even living down there. So I wanted to see, you know, what it was like for them down there. So in the film, I follow these guys around for a week, and we do it all. We talk about it all. We talk about their own personal experiences, and we experience Disney magic together. And that's really the foundation of the film.
That's so being all that said, did you kind of like want to step into their shoes and kind of live or see it through their eyes, like, you know, why, you know, Lou does what he does, or Jenny Lind does what she does, or Ricky does what he does. Because in a sense, you know, from the footage I've seen in the trailers, it looks like they're sitting, talking, telling their story. But, you know, were you also then trying to get, you know, their perspective and point us, like, you know, hey, this is how, you know, Lou sees the parks, or this is how Ricky sees the parks?
Well, yeah, I mean, we do talk a lot about that. And for me, I think, you know, the interest was finding people who were, you know, who were able to actually make it happen for themselves, you know, who actually took those steps to make it become a reality. Another person who we interview in the film, Corinne Anderson, who is a merchandise kind of guru, and she works a lot. She's kind of Ricky Briganti's right-hand person, who essentially manages a lot of the, you know, what you see on InsideTheMagic.net. You know, she kind of branched off and did her own thing. You know, she's got a couple, I mean, she's like the merchandise queen, I call her. You know, and she's from Sweden. Right. So, you know, she grew up and, you know, made the plunge and moved from Sweden down there, down to Orlando, didn't know anybody, and was able to make a place for herself and has become kind of part of the Disney community. I think, you know, and it's something I didn't realize until I was embedded with them for that week, you know, because we took, you know, several months to kind of get to know each other remotely over the phone. And just kind of understand what each other's stories were. But it wasn't until I got down there and really kind of became embedded with them that I really understood that what these people are doing is they're involved. There's this community of people, right? Disney is not just the parks. It's the people. And this is what Walt Disney wanted, right? I mean, when you think about Epcot and what Epcot was originally supposed to be, which was a community of people testing new technologies and living those technologies and living that life, you know, even though that's not what Epcot has become, his vision of a community of people is real. I mean, it's happening down there. I mean, the people that I have met just by doing this documentary and who I am now very good friends with and who I very much look forward to seeing and spending time with when I go down there are not only the podcasters and the bloggers, they're the people who watch the podcasts and the blogs and who, you know, are just thirst for Disney knowledge. You know, it's the people who can't be down in the parks, you know, the people in the UK and the people, you know, who can only get down there a couple of times a year. They want to be able to get a taste of that magic, you know, when they're in snowy Wisconsin or wherever they might live. And that is part of the Disney community. That's what it's all about. So Walt was very passionate about that. And, you know, and being, you know, involved with these folks for the week that I was down there, really, it allowed me to really to live that world with them and to see how all their friends are so interconnected and how people.
Yeah, that's true because. It's true because me and John met at a Disney meetup, you know.
Right.
A blogger. I think it was Lou's. It was one of Lou's meet. We were, and I was standing there talking to Steve Barrett, who does the Hidden Mickey books, and John came up and said, "Hey, are you Tony from Disney by the Numbers?" And I said, "Yeah," and we've been friends ever since then. So
yeah, well, that's the thing about it.
And that's how it goes. That's how it goes. You know, you don't have to. You know, you can go down there and not know anybody, and if you're willing to. You know, if you're willing to jump in feet first, you'll make friends right away. And they're all the people who know, who feel the same way that you do about Disney. Because I'm sure you guys know. I mean, you're down in Orlando, and I know kind of, you know, being in Florida, you know, sort of all roads lead to Disney, right? Mm-hmm. But the folks up this way, when they hear that you're going down to Disney again,
right?
They don't quite get it. They don't quite understand what the attraction is. You know, there's other places to go. Why don't you go other places? And sure, you know, I mean, I visit, you know, many other places. But I mean, the place that I enjoy to be most is down in the parks. And even more so now after I've developed these relationships and kind of gotten involved in the Disney community, it just becomes even more attractive to me. I've got more things to do. I've got more people to see and more people to enjoy spending the time with. I mean, honestly, John Panda has been, he's just been terrific. And him and I have become very good friends. Just love going down there and just kind of hanging out with those guys and seeing them do their thing. You know, camera in hand, I can go around the parks even by myself. I'll go into the Magic Kingdom with my camera and just shoot video and just shoot time lapse. And there's just so much going on. There's never a repeat performance. I mean, obviously, I've seen Wish as many times as I'm right. sure you guys have. Right. But I just love seeing the guests around me enjoy themselves because, you know, I know how incredibly special it is for them. People who might have only been down there once or twice in a lifetime, right? Because Disney is almost seems so intangible for so many people. And I think that also, you know, Disney's bar is so high that people know when they go down there, it's going to be an experience that they'll never forget. And being immersed in that, being able to capture that and to share it with other people, and that's really what I wanted to do with this documentary. I wanted to try to really capture the essence of why this place is so special and actually capture that magic in action. And there are many moments in this film that I think will make you cry, will make you laugh. It's a real labor of love, and I am really excited to share it with the Disney community.
Yeah, and that's, you touched on a couple things. The first thing is, you know, like Tony and I, We've developed a friendship. You've developed friendships with Panda, and we know Panda, and we know everybody in the pretty much everybody in the documentary. I think that we're familiar with to a lesser or greater degree. And the thing that we've discovered is that as much as I love to go and I could ride Pirates of the Caribbean another 1,000 more times and still enjoy mm-hmm. it, and I can go do, you know, some people would say the same old things. I could ride the Haunted Mansion. I know what it's going to do. I know, you know, there's no surprises, but that's not the thing. The thing is I go to Disney to enjoy being with my friends. My friends, right. You know, we have Disney, and I have friends who are not necessarily Disney fans or partial to the parks, but what Disney does is it gives you, especially if you're local, it gives you kind of a lubricant to help ease those friendships along, because Tony and I will meet up and we'll have, you know, dinner at Disney Springs, or we may just meet up off property and hang out, you know, but we're usually talking about Disney, or we'll be on property hanging out talking about Disney, or just talking about stuff and life in general. And that's mm-hmm. the connection is always Disney. But it's not like we have to always be there riding the rides, you know? It's just,
well, there's so much more to do. I think when you first go down there, and Lou Mangiello put it terrifically, he said, you know, one of the questions I asked him was, you know, what would you say to someone who's never been to Disney before? You know, what advice would you give them, you know, in their planning their first trip? And his thing was, you know, you don't have to make the dash to Splash. You don't have to make the race to Space. All you got to do is sit back and just take it all in. It's easy for us to say because we've been down there so many times. But, you know, I went down there with a friend of mine who had never been down there, and he was so overwhelmed with everything. He just didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to handle everything. There was so much to do. But I think, you know, when you're going down there for the first time, you really want to be able to try to do everything. And obviously that's not possible. There's so much to do. I mean, if you're down there for a week, you could pretty much do it all. But, you know, when I go down there, the first thing I do is I walk down Main Street and I find Jim Omohundro, who is the ragtime piano player at Casey's Corner, and I hang out with him for about half an hour, 45 minutes, and just listen to him play, and just, I dig watching the kids walk by, and he's so interactive with the kids.
Right.
And that guy he just exudes Disney magic. I mean, he's been there, I think, almost 35 years. When I listen to him play, I could just sit there and listen to him, you know, all day.
Sure.
And I, you know, I've got my fast passes and all that stuff, but lots of people watch when I'm down there, you know?
Yeah, I think that's half the entertainment is the people. And listening to parents tell their kids about, you know, an attraction or, you know, what's going to happen or something. You know, for me, that's half the entertainment is the people. So, hey, going back to the movie a little bit, you know, I was watching the trailer and there was some it seemed like some vintage footage in there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that from your private collection? Is that, you know, where did you dig up? I know YouTube's got a fountain of stuff, but some of that stuff is really good. So where did you find all the good vintage stuff from?
Yep. Well, I've got a resource that I connected with. He has what he does is he restores old home movies, Disney home movies, RetroDisneyWorld.com. You guys might know him. You should, if you don't know him, if you've never seen his site, you should check it out. It's, I was floored when I saw the quality of some of these Super 8, movies that he has from, you know, the 70s, and even from Disneyland in the 50s.
I just recently stumbled across a video, that he has online.
Yeah. If you go to his site, you'll be blown away. I mean, he's got incredible footage of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and just, you know, he's got a couple of these shots like of Frontierland where he's panning, and it's like, you know, some of the videos or the movies were shot by his father. Some he got from, you know, various people who asked him to restore, you know, video who had been down there over the years. But, you know, he's got this one gorgeous shot where he pans across Frontierland and the space where Splash Mountain is now is just completely bare. And that caught my, it's just crazy. You know, you see that and you're like, and what just really hits it home is the quality of his video, because he spent, you know, a lot of time really restoring it to full quality. And it's just, you can't believe that this stuff is 40 years old. It's just unbelievable. So that was a big thing for me. I wanted to make sure that, you know, when guys like Lou and Ricky are talking about the days of ore, that we were able to really kind of illustrate that. And I think Disney fans will really appreciate that, because most of the footage you have out there of, you know, kind of retro Disney is really pretty much poor quality. It's just really jumpy and just the picture quality is not good. You know, there's footage of the swan boats that used to go around Cinderella Castle, right?
Mm-hmm.
I always wonder why they got rid of those, you know, I can't think of what you call them, the sky trams, they were the vehicles that went, that kind of, it was kind of like a ski lift, right? I don't know what
Skyway to Tomorrow and up front in Fantasyland.
Right, and I'm looking at the footage that people are shooting off them, and I'm saying to myself, how did they get that vantage point? And then I realized, oh yeah, you know, they used to actually be able to be at that height, you know, take terrific shots. And I'm thinking, God, if I had my tripod back in those days, I could take some amazing shots.
Right.
So for me, it's about telling a really comprehensive story in this film. It's heartfelt because it touches on why these guys came down there in the first place, what is keeping them down there. I mean, look, Lou was a lawyer. And he worked, you know, as a technology guy in a medical company. He had a great job, and he just kind of followed his passion. And I think that's kind of the inner story, is kind of following your passion. People who love Disney, and the same thing that I did. You know, when my daughter got old enough, you know, and was kind of in that in-between age where she, you know, Disney might not have been the top of her list of things to do. It was, for me, it was becoming, you know, it was growing as a passion for me. And when I first started going down there by myself, that's kind of when I started curating these ideas of wanting to kind of capture why I am so interested. You know, here I am, a grown man. I'm going down to Disney and I'm spending time down there by myself, but I'm meeting people. I'm now actually becoming part of the Disney community. And I wanted to tell that story. And I think that there's a lot of folks, Disney fans and even not Disney fans, I'm hoping that there will be people who maybe didn't you know, fans who kind of, you know, like Disney, it's a cool place, I kind of get it, who will watch this and be able to really understand that, okay, you know, I kind of see what the attraction is. And, you know, at the end of the day, the message is follow your dreams. If it's something that you want to do, you should do it. And that's what these guys did. And they are living their dreams. And it's something that I think that connects with a lot of people.
Yeah, one of the, you know, I come from, I do a lot of video. So I marveled at how really gorgeous your video was, you know, at least for the trailer, the trailers that I've seen. And, you know, Tony was talking about the vintage stuff. I am fascinated by the things like the time-lapse things that you have. Was that something that you did on your own, or did you get some footage from Disney? I'm just genuinely curious, and now that I have you, I just have to ask that question.
Yeah, well, the time-lapse has been, it's always been a creative passion of mine, and I saw several years ago a Disney time-lapse that, I don't remember who did it, but it was a time-lapse, and it was a very short time-lapse. I really wanted to, I just always thought, even growing up, that, you know, time lapse is just such a cool kind of thing to watch. And for me, I really wanted to do something that kind of raised the bar, where the quality was something that, because a lot of the time lapse I see is, it's, it looks cool, but the quality is not that great. I really wanted to do something where the quality was at a really high level. So I began learning how to shoot time lapse, you know, like call these holy grail settings, which is when you're shooting like true sunsets that are going through sunset to dark to moonlit sky, and understanding how to make those sequences really smooth. So I took those skills and I applied them to my passion for Disney. And I went down there and I shot the first really big time-lapse video that I did, which was the Day in the Life of Walt Disney World. And that was a 10.5-minute time lapse that is on YouTube. It's got almost 500,000 views right now. It's doing very well. And that was kind of what opened the door for me to this documentary. So to answer your question, all the time lapse you see in the video, in the, you know, the trailer and all that stuff you might see on my YouTube channel, stuff that I shot, that I have traveled. Every time I go down there, I'm shooting, you know, more and more time lapse. I mean, wait till you see the stuff that's going to be in the documentary. It's hard for me to hold back. Did you guys see the Osborne Lights thing that I just released?
I haven't yet. No.
No, I just released
on YouTube a couple of days ago when I was down there last month because I wanted to make sure I captured Osborne Lights before they took it away forever. I shot the Osborne Lights time lapse. So I did, you know, I did sunset on Streets of America. So it's sunset right up until the lights come on. It's just a great little sequence that I think everybody will enjoy. And parts of that are in the trailer. There's other stuff that I'm doing from a great room in the Contemporary that I have. Needless to say, you know, to get some of these shots, you have to be in the right room. So, you know, we were able to get for a couple of nights a room in the the theme park view at the Contemporary. That's one of the opening shots you see. Unfortunately, the weather that month when I was there, it was in the middle of August. It was just so humid. So some of the clarity I wasn't getting. So I'm going to go back there next month and shoot more of that stuff. But, you know, for me, I want this to be beautiful for people to watch. I want them to be able to not only hear the story and kind of feel like they're part of it, but to also see those, you know, those, that beautiful Disney imagery. And a lot of it I want to present in time lapse format, because, you know, when done right, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, it would have been interesting, you know, if you could have tied the vintage Osborne lights when they used to have it, you know, on the Streets of America, with, you know, the ending of what it became, this huge, you know, went from like 1 million lights to 5 million lights. It would have been interesting to tie those two things together in some kind of, you know, wicked little time lapse, but that's another project.
Yeah, if I was able to, you're talking about over the years how it's evolved from when they first started it.
Yeah,
I wish I had all that footage. You know, if you talk about pilfering from YouTube, you know, I try not to do that. There's so much stuff out there, but you know, the Todd from Retro Disney, mm-hmm. he you know, he was, he was super, super nice, you know, let me use his footage. So just trying to make sure we give credit where credit is due.
Right.
Because there's some really so many incredible people who have, you know, have come through, you know, because I think, you know, it's funny that the fans, the people who, because we had a Kickstarter campaign, we raised about $10,000, which, you know, helped to pay for the camera equipment and hiring camera, a small camera crew to help film this stuff. You know, that all that stuff was so important to make this film a reality, all the contributions that everybody made, you know, on Kickstarter. But I think a lot of the people who did that, you know, they did it not only because, you know, they wanted to help, but they really want to see this made because they're true Disney fans. You know, they want to help and you know, contribute to making, you know, this documentary a reality. And it is a reality because essentially the entire edit is complete. At this point, you know, I'm just filling in some story points that I have to go back and reshoot. But overall, it's almost ready to go. I'm hoping to release it sometime, like late spring, like maybe April or May, early May, I'm hoping. So we'll see.
How was it with working with Disney? If you have a camera and a small crew, how was Disney to work with when you wanted to shoot inside the park?
Well, when I say camera and small crew, I mean me and a professional guy that I've known for many years who has a lot of experience, you know, in the field. And it was understood that, you know, look, there were no boom poles or anything like that. It was literally just a DSLR camera on a monopod following everybody around. And, you know, we had a couple of lavalier mics, which a couple of folks wore. And the mics really picked up everything great. So if you were standing next to somebody who was mic'd, you could hear them beautifully. But it was really important for me not to interfere with anybody in the parks while this was happening. We were literally just, you know, walking around with a DSLR camera, just kind of shooting, you know, what these guys were doing. You know, they were, I mean, it's like, you know, they'll stop and they'll do a Periscope broadcast. Right. And it was cool too, because like more than once, I mean, at least I would say between everybody, I would say at least 7 or 8 times people recognize them in the parks. And we have footage of, you know, fans going, oh my God, you know, Panda, I watch your show, or Lou, we watch you, and Jenny Lynn, I watch you on the Diz. And like, it was so cool to capture those moments because that's what this was all about, you know. So we were very, 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 very basic setup, you know, literally just a couple of lavalier mics and a DSLR camera, Canon 7D Mark II, which shoots beautiful video.
Yeah, because that was my next question, what kind of equipment? Because I know Disney photo buffs that like to, you know, get the great Disney photo shot of the castle and Main Street and all that. So I'm sure somebody would have asked us. But in the time lapse, going back to, so how many frames, you know, per second or per hour were you shooting to get that kind of, you know, great time lapse? Because I've tried time lapse and it doesn't always come out that great.
Well, that's true. And I mean, I'll try to do the down and dirty for you. I mean, ultimately, you want to be able to shoot in manual mode. Well, it all depends what you're shooting, really. If you're shooting a sunset, you want to see the sun go down at a, you know, decent interval,
right,
then you want to shoot it probably like 5 to 7 frames per second. But if you want to shoot people walking, you want to shoot quicker, like 1 frame per second, so that you get that real cool kind of look. And then you can create, you know, motion blur depending on how your shutter is set. You can have the people blur or have them be clear. It's really a matter of what you're looking to do. But the one thing I learned is, you know, you just basically have to shoot in manual mode. You can shoot aperture priority, but you'll get flicker, especially if you're trying to shoot sunsets, and you have to go back, you know, and use software later on to remove that flicker. But if you're shooting manual mode and, you know, you're shooting a sunset and you're basically just going to adjust your shutter speed, you know, like every couple of minutes as the light changes.
Right.
Then you bring it into your LR time lapse, which is what I use. Amazing time lapse software. Use that and it just blends everything together perfectly and you get gorgeous, gorgeous time lapses. Yeah, it took me, I mean, I'm lucky enough when I live here in Connecticut and I live on the 11th floor of an apartment that overlooks about 50 miles from Manhattan. So you can see New York City lights and several, and you'll see some of the videos I have, you know, on YouTube and Vimeo of the time lapses, and you're kind of looking out and you could kind of see New York in the background. That's kind of how I got good at time lapse. I just kept practicing.
So, Tony, tell everybody where they can get the movie so they can run out and purchase it.
Yep. Well, we're doing pre-orders right now. If you go to dreamfindersmovie.com, that's dreamfindersmovie.com, you can pre-order the movie for $9.99. But if you use the code NEWYEAR2016, you'll get a buck off, and you can do that.
Great.
And you'll be able to watch the trailer and, you know, get an idea of, you know, what it's all about.
And you're saying it's going to be available early spring?
Yeah, I'm shooting for, probably end of April or early May. We're going to set a date probably within the next couple of weeks. But I'm heading down there to Orlando to shoot a little bit, you know, a little bit of other stuff next week, and then we'll see where we're at when I come back. We're in very good shape here, and this it's really panning out to be a great story. It covers Lou, John, Jenny Lynn, Corinne, Ricky, you know, all the main characters, and it really shows you, you know, the passion that these people have, you know, and how, you know, Disney magic is. It's a real thing. You know, people love to be here because it's a real thing.
Yeah. Is there a place that people can follow you on social media? If they want to, your YouTube channel or any place where you have the videos?
Yeah, well, absolutely. On Facebook, we are at facebook.com/dreamfinders.
Okay.
You can hit us up on Twitter at Silverpin Studios, because that's the film company, right? What else do you guys need?
Do you have like a YouTube channel where you have videos people can watch? Or are they on the...
Oh, yeah, that would be like, that's Tony Cortez. You can just check me out on YouTube at Tony Cortez, or Cortese, as the Italians pronounce it. or you can just check me out at Silverpin Studios. It'll go to the same place.
All right. Well, great. Hey, we want to thank you for taking the time and coming on and telling us all this. And I'm, you know, kind of anxious now. I'm going to have to go order my copy because it sounds really fun to watch. So, the photography and the video, I think, is awesome. You know, so it'll be just a bonus, I guess, you know, seeing Lou and John and Corinne and Ricky blended in there. Probably one of everybody's favorite background, Disney World. So.
It's a great story. It's a great story of why we all love to come down here. That's what it's all about, really.
You have anything else, John?
No. I think we covered pretty much everything. I appreciate all your guys' time, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, that was great.
So, as we say, we'll see you in the parks.
The Disney Parks Podcast is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company. All Disney parks, attractions, lands, shows, event names, etc., are registered trademarks of the Walt Disney Company.
Like a blow out of the blue, fate steps in and sees you through one reach upon a star. Your dream.